This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the hectic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hectic indeed. Have we not used hectic before, Matthew? I feel like you try and choose a new word every time, but I feel like you must have used that one once or twice.
Yeah, I don't know. As soon as I said it, I thought, have we used it? I don't think we have. I'll check through the archives, but I'm pretty sure it's the first time.
Yeah, it's been a busy, really busy couple of weeks since we last put out a pod. Really busy. Went to Amsterdam for a day. Literally, I spent more time in the air than on the ground when I was there. But it is that time of the season, of course. January, the January fun. Although the January fun hasn't necessarily started just yet. You tend to find that there's kind of a lot of jostling in the, not just the goalkeeping world, but in the transfer window in general. Obviously, it's one of the reasons you see so many deals happen late in the window. But there's often a few that happen in the first week. So my guess, I know we'll put this out later today, won't we? So my guess is we'll start to see that movement probably tomorrow. A little bit of a goalkeeping merry-go-round, I think. And so my plans for the month will be pretty much being on the phone from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, except for when we do this podcast.
Of course. Just to touch on what you said there, you said you were in the air for longer than you were on the ground in Amsterdam, in that trip to Amsterdam. Is that what it takes a lot of the time for you to go to places, to go to cities, to speak to managers, speak to heads of recruitment, speak to goalkeepers, and that you are literally traveling so far to jump in for a couple of hours and then jumping straight back on a plane?
Yeah, well, in that case, it was, I think with, in terms of, you know, goalkeeper network, just agency in general, if you've got a player going to a club, of course, you want to try and be with that player when they go into the club. And if that's to sign or a medical, or even if it's just a lot of interest, it's always good to be able to get in front of the types of people that you know you'll be dealing with further down the line as well. So, look, I think most agents are probably similar to myself in that regard, where if there is an opportunity that you can go and spend some quality time with a club, get to know the club, which is also important. And I won't, in this case, I won't name the club in question for a couple of different reasons, but it was really interesting seeing how they set things up, their philosophy. And again, you see so many different ways of operating, you know, and when you compare it to, say, how clubs operate in the Premier League and the Championship, it's really nice to get, obviously meet new people, which is great, but it's really nice to get a feel as to how others operate. Because again, I suppose like anything, any job you do, to then understand each of these different environments, it can then help you maybe put forward profiles that can fit them. Because of course, the more you know them, the more that you'll have a good idea as to what might fit that particular outfit.
And how many hours do you think you spend on the phone per month? In particular, in January, you are going to be spending a lot of time on that handset.
Yeah, well, I know my screen time has been increasing. So, you know, you get the like update once a week on I don't know if you get that on your iPhone, but it tells you your screen time for the week. And it's in excess of 12 hours a day at the moment. And it will probably increase a little bit more just because essentially that's it. Where it is a big jigsaw. You know, if you hear that a goalkeeper is moving from one club to another club, then of course there's going to be an opening at that club. Now, they might have already done their research prior. They might have some goalkeepers lined up for that particular position. But what you'll often find in January is that because it is quite a reactive window, it's not one where players are ordinarily out of contract. So the moves that you see happen, they're not always pre-planned. It might be that a goalkeeper gets a serious injury on the Saturday and they need to bring someone in on the Monday. Now, they'll have an idea of like players they'll want to bring in. And if they are able to bring one in, then of course it leaves a hole somewhere else. And you see this whole kind of domino effect effectively happen. So it is, because it changes so quickly, you really do, especially if you're going to do it to a high level, you need to be pretty much on it minute by minute, constantly have Sky Sports News on in the background, constantly looking online to see what information I can find out about goalkeepers and where there could be potential openings. And then having, I guess, the insight and the knowledge to know who might be a good fit for that particular club.
We are also in this strange, never-before-seen scenario of football returning after a World Cup mid-season. So there haven't been too many games in the immediate lead-up to the window. Yes, League One and League Two for a bit, Championship and Prem as well. But it does feel like that rumour mill that we ordinarily see at this stage of the season hasn't been as front and centre as it normally would be. Then you have the break. From a goalkeeping perspective, and I guess as a whole, do you think it will have an impact on teams, on individuals at all, be that a positive or a negative, this whole stop-start nature to the season?
I think it can work both ways. You know, I guess it's not ideal to feel like you've almost got another pre-season during the season. But then for most of the lads that I spoke to have like, you know, 10 days off or whatever most of them had for the international, for the World Cup, the Championship, I mean, Premier League lads had even longer off. It was quite a nice welcome break to have that at this stage in the season, because it's something that they'll never have had before, will never have again. So I think most have seen it positively, but it has been interesting seeing players come back, seeing teams come back. I guess it is like the start of the season again, where you see a few that hit the ground running, a few, you know, I know that we'll touch on Arsenal at some point, and a couple of others, a few where you do wonder whether that was going to disrupt such positive momentum, but seemingly not in, in most cases. So, yeah, I think it can really work both ways. I think from a keeper's point of view, something that I will say, and this is more based on the fact that the games have been at all times of the day over the last couple of weeks, I was never really a massive fan of that, because like that was the one that I always used to hate, was the 5:30 kickoff. The reason would be that you ordinarily a 3 o'clock kickoff, you might have your routine that you follow week after week. Suddenly with a 5:30 kickoff, it's almost a bit too early to maybe have like an afternoon nap that you might do if you're going to have an evening kickoff. And it just feels like it's quite a long day, you know, especially if you're cooped up in a hotel. There's only so many box sets you can watch, or lying around on a hotel bed waiting for the game to come around. So I was never a big fan of that personally, because I always felt a bit lethargic going into the games. But that's probably the only negative I could see to this, you know, is the fact that it really is at all times of the day. But then something that I did learn on my travels, one of my travels going to Belgium, was that actually over there, and some of you might know this already, but they actually, their games, they do it very in like a really interesting way, which kind of then probably aligns with what we've seen over the Christmas period, is that they play the games on a Friday, Saturday or Sunday, and they stagger every single game so that every single game is effectively live. And it's one of the reasons it's the most scouted league in the world, is because every game is in isolation. Effectively, it'll be live on TV. So if you were a football fan in Belgium, you could see every single top flight game every single weekend. And I thought that was a really interesting way to go about things. It just reminded me of kind of what we experienced over the Christmas period.
That's why Scott Parker's gone there, I suppose, isn't it?
There you go. Big news.
Box sets, by the way. Mm. Is that a thing then? You sit in your hotel room and you watch box sets? Because that would make me really lethargic. If I watch TV and I'm watching episode after episode, which shouldn't happen anyway, by the way, the whole Netflix era of binge watching things is utterly ridiculous. Give me a show, watch it 1 week, it's on the same time the following week, and it lasts for a couple of months. That's what we need in life.
Oh my god, that's a Beatleism if I've ever heard one. That's no look right, what would they do? We actually think about it, it's a funny, I always found that I struggled a bit on match days with that, because I could never find a routine that really worked for me. Because if you had an evening kickoff, let's say for instance, then well, you can't exactly go out during the day. You're not going to go walk around the shops, or you know, you're not necessarily want to go for a run or anything. So you do find that you want to rest because you want to be in the best possible state come game time. But then what do you do during a day in order to allow yourself to do that? So I'd ordinarily maybe go for like a walk in the morning, do a bit of a stretch, kind of go through some of my I suppose mental routines to make sure I'm in the right place come the evening, maybe have a bit of a sleep. But you're effectively just killing time towards the game, because there's nothing else that you would necessarily do on a match day. So then yeah, you do often find that you'll stick the TV on, you watch a couple of episodes. Well, in our day, Matthew, it might be a couple of episodes of Friends on DVD. You know, that would have been maybe the pre-match watching. But it does always feel like such a long day, because you can't really do anything and you are effectively just waiting for kickoff.
Okay, good stuff. Without further ado, shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Right, it has been a couple of weeks since we were last on air. We did say that we were due to initially do a Between the Sticks once games returned on Boxing Day, but your schedule, coupled with the fact that those games have been coming thick and fast, I don't know about you, but I completely lost track of who was playing and when they were playing over the festive period. But what that means is that this won't be a customary Between the Sticks as listeners know it. There are games tonight, there's more tomorrow, we've got the EFL Cup, we've got the FA Cup thrown into that mix too. So the customary Between the Sticks will all return. EFL Overview, Clean Sheet, Club Keeper Capers, once we eventually get back to that Saturday, Tuesday routine. But for this podcast, Richard, what we'll do is something slightly different in the form of five big questions I shall present to you. These will focus generally on the season, but with a nod to the games just gone in the festive period. Okay?
Okay.
Perfect. So the first of those questions is Hugo Lloris past his best? Because that is exactly what Graeme Souness alluded to in the game between Spurs and Aston Villa a couple of days ago. Spurs going down at home to Villa 2-0. Now, they were in the Sky Sports studio, as per. Presenter David Jones suggested that maybe it was a World Cup hangover from Hugo Lloris and Christian Romero. The first goal scored by Emi Buendia was a fault by Hugo Lloris. And Souness said, "I'm not a big fan of Lloris. I've said it for a long time. For me, he's past his sell-by date." He did also allude to the fact that Lloris has conceded more goals as a result of an error leading to a goal than any other goalkeeper in the Premier League. Now, technically, that's kind of not exactly true. It's joint top with Tim Krul with 4, but Tim Krul, of course, is now in the Championship with Norwich.
Okay, so interesting question, Matthew. I know you've got 5 big questions, so this is the first of the 5. But do you know what? I think if you actually read into what Graham Souness said, he's given you the answer, which is, you know, I talk a lot on here about preconceived ideas, you know, and that often if you've made your mind up on something or somebody, then it can be quite difficult to change that, you know. And I can't help but feel with some of this, I've sensed it from Souness before towards Lloris, where there'll be very little credit when he does something well. But then, of course, when he doesn't, naturally, it's then very easy to kind of, well, that backs up my point. I told you I was right. And then you'll find a stat that, you know, I saw that one the other day, that this season he's made 3 unforced errors, according to, again, how you can gauge that is beyond me, because it's surely got to be on the eye. That's got to be somebody that's saying that, as opposed to, I know it'll be done via stats, but how can you say what is an unforced error and what is a forced error, so to speak? So look, is he past his best? I don't think he is. I think that the game against England in the World Cup was an example of that. You know, I think that ordinarily when it comes to the big games in particular, I think that you look at his track record, it's been very, very good. I just think this was an individual error. And actually, if you were to break it down and break down the goal, which is what they should have done, rather than, you know, always winds me up when people go with like generalizations and what have you. And, you know, all the pundits seem to do it, where it's very easy just to wrap it up in a nice bow and be like, well, there you go, he's not very good. I told you he's not very good. Whereas actually, if they were to look at the goal itself, was it a mistake? Was it something he could have done better with? Yes, of course. But like we like to do, to actually break down the moment. Now, any goalkeeper listening to this, they'll tell you this isn't an easy ball to deal with. If you see it from behind the goal when it's struck and there's that bit of movement on it, very little spin. Again, we talk about that, where if the ball's spinning, you can pick it up with your eyes that little bit more. Very little spin. It skids off the turf and bounces up quite high. So then to actually perform a technique in order to hold it is a lot harder than it looks. Now, does he normally hold this? Yes, which is why he'll hold his hands up and say that it was an error. But it's one, again, that looks much worse than it is. So what you'll often find in a situation like this, a lot of goalkeepers might even try and sort of stun the ball or kill the ball down and get on the second ball, which is what I think he tried to do when he realised it was skipping up off the turf and he hadn't quite picked up the flight of it. He's almost tried to then kill it as best he can and get on the second ball. And of course, it gets away from him a little bit too much and he can't quite get on the second ball. But yeah, I think for us to go into this idea of, oh, well, there you go, he's past his best, that's another proof, you know, another case to prove it. Well, actually, you know, we could pick out the many, many good things that he's done this season and over the last couple of seasons and the World Cup on the whole. And it bugged me the other day, actually, because I saw an article that after this game, and I think it might have been The Sun or whatever, and again, they like to sensationalise, but they kind of made out, it was like Hugo Lloris continues his poor form after the World Cup was effectively the story. And I'm looking, thinking, like, really? I watched all of his games in the World Cup. I thought he was excellent. Even the final, yeah. Okay, Martinez did brilliantly on the penalty. He's made that great save and he was very much a star of the show. But it wasn't one where Lloris was at fault for any goals in the World Cup or could have done all that much more. So, yeah, really bizarre. But it's just annoying because then, again, that builds the momentum, this negative momentum. And, you know, how often do we see it in the world of goalkeeping where one error and suddenly that one error he's made in this game has now turned into him having a terrible World Cup and being past his best and so on and so forth. You know, if he makes a save there, then none of this is said. So, yeah, must be frustrating for him.
Yeah, I saw that article as well, the one you mentioned there. I think there were actually a couple, and it irked me. It did irk me, which I guess, I mean, that suggests it's done its job, right? It's grabbed my attention. I'm talking about it now. So a salacious headline is doing what it was supposed to do because we're talking about it. It's created an impact. But I just thought at the time, how dare you, one, completely make stuff up and fabricate something that just never happened, and two, disregard and almost write someone off who's given so much to the game, so much to the profession that you've enjoyed over the years. It reminded me too of the time that Petr Cech was called out for not being able to play out from the back. Do you remember that when he, I think it might have been the opening game of the campaign when Unai Emery came in as Arsenal boss and wanted to play out from the back, thus giving Petr Cech a responsibility that he'd never had in his career before. They went and signed Bernd Leno, and it was after one of those games where Cech hadn't been convincing playing out from the back that Bayer Leverkusen, on their official channel, which is unbelievable to think, put a tweet out saying, "Here you go, Arsenal fans, this is what you can expect from a goalkeeper that knows how to play out from the back." Now, ordinarily, a professional would just completely ignore that. You wouldn't respond to it. But on that occasion, Petr Cech was like, "No, enough's enough. I'm not having that. That's insulting." And he responded with a rather eloquent tweet to Bayer Leverkusen and their official channel. But it does come to a point, doesn't it? Like it did in the World Cup when Hugo Lloris was branded a weak link by the English press. He didn't necessarily react directly to that, but you could tell that it annoyed him. For someone who's also played in England for so much of his career, to then get that kind of response from the English press just isn't fair. And I think there does come a point when a goalkeeper is able to turn around and say, "No, enough's enough."
Yeah, I agree completely. Like you say, this is a World Cup winner that we're talking about who's been so consistent. You're right. And I'll use that word again, over familiarity, if I can say it, because it is that. And I think, look, in a perfect world, and I'll say this pretty much about this, very few goalkeepers that don't fall under this category, certainly in the current age. I think it was a bit different before with maybe the media being slightly different, social media certainly not being around. But I think now the world that we live in, where it can change literally overnight, in terms of your reputation and what people think of you. And I think, again, in a perfect world, you'd almost stay at a club for 3 years and then move on every 3 years, because then you've kind of got the benefit of going somewhere, being the bright new shiny object that everyone loves, and then you can kind of leave with a good name intact and go to your next place. Because I just find that, you know, at the moment, maybe barring Edison and Alisson, who have, I'd say, retained, you know, they've been over 3 years now. But other than that, I think pretty much every goalkeeper at some point has gone through a real rough patch with fans, with the media, and so on and so forth.
Okay, good stuff. Moving on to question two, Richard, which is a double kind of question. And this is, should David De Gea be handed a new deal at Manchester United? And indeed, will David De Gea ever be regarded as a legend for Manchester United?
Ooh, again, good questions these today, aren't they? Legend, yeah, I think he should be. I mean, given how many times he's won Player of the Year, and again, probably similar to the conversation we just had about Lloris there, that he's very much gone through a similar thing where he had a bit of a rough patch, and certainly people got on his back. And in fairness, he's bounced back well a couple of times where maybe he didn't think he would. Should he get offered a new contract? Yeah, I think he should. I think, from what I understand, the contract won't be of the level of what it was previously, which I think is understandable. But then it is a case of, it's in the case of David De Gea, what does he want to do moving forward? Now, I think from Man United's point of view, where they're building what they're looking to build now, and it seems like they're starting to get back onto a decent path, then you can certainly see David De Gea being part of that future. So I think that, you know, certainly makes sense. I think if David De Gea were to move on, then they would need to go and recruit an elite goalkeeper. And I think they kind of look at it in the building. They've got someone that's more than good enough to fill that role for the next 3 or 4 years. So why wouldn't you continue with that? I know there'll be some that then argue you've got the likes of a Dean Henderson in the offing as well. So they've got a decision to make on both ends. It'd be really interesting to see how that plays out, actually, with the whole Dean Henderson, David De Gea. Because, of course, if he does sign this new contract, then you just feel that Dean Henderson, if he wants to achieve what he wants to achieve, I can't ever see him coming back to be a number two. So that'll be interesting, probably more towards the summer, you'd think. Going back to, I mentioned there, in terms of being a legend, I think that it's a difficult one because they haven't necessarily won all that much since he's been there. So that'll be the negative on him. But as I often say, there's only so much a goalkeeper can do. You know, I find, like I say this to my clients all the time, whether you're in a fantastic team or a not so good team, you can maximise your place within that team and what you offer to the team. But if you're in a team that just aren't that good, which United haven't been for, certainly not to the levels they were for quite some time, then look, who's to say, would United have won all those titles previously with a David De Gea instead of a Peter Schmeichel? Quite possibly. We don't know. We'll never know. So I think in terms of what he's done individually during the time he's been there, I think on the whole, it's been very good.
Yes, so 176 clean sheets now. United won at Wolves a couple of days ago. And in that victory, he overtook Alex Stepney for clean sheets, all-time clean sheets at the club. He's now in second spot. That's four behind Peter Schmeichel. He's second currently in the Premier League for clean sheets this season. I believe he's got more clean sheets than any goalkeeper currently in the Premier League overall. So he's leading that current pack. But when you look at the clean sheets that he has made, 176 in his career, for the first season or two, he had a decent back four in front of him. But if you look at the defences he's had in front of him as well for the past, what, six, seven, eight seasons, that kind of makes that achievement even better.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And as I say, where I give him a lot of credit is that I think when I look at some of the tough spells that he went through, for a goalkeeper, you often find that when once you've built a reputation, it can be quite hard to shift, you know, and you often see, you know, I'll give some extreme examples, but, you know, a Taibbi, when he came into England, had a few games, didn't work out, we never saw him again. Because once you get off to a bad start, to try and turn that back round, you're not a striker, you can't go and score a hat-trick and win everyone over. You know, it can take a period of time to do that. And I think it takes a lot of resilience, a lot of mental strength. And in fairness, he's shown that because, you know, there were certainly times over the last couple of years where you felt that maybe his time was coming to an end, and each time he's bounced back and re-established himself. And actually at the moment, as you say, he's looking very good. I mean, the game at the weekend in particular against Wolves makes a couple of very good saves. The save to his left was a very, I'd call it a classic De Gea save, you know, where it's that one aesthetically just so pleasing to watch, the way in which he moves across the goal, almost glides when he dives. You know, it's not like some goalkeepers, it's raw power when they dive. I think of a Ben Foster or someone like that, you know, real powerful movement and explosion. Whereas with David De Gea, he almost, as I say, it's so delicate, you know, he just glides and floats and gets a hand to put it around the post. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, really is. And just to finish on this particular topic, you mentioned there about a potential pay cut for David De Gea, not on the same term. So his contract's up at the end of the season. United have the option to extend for a further year. It seems like the sounds that De Gea is making suggest that he wants to take that option. But psychologically, if we talk about ego here, for a footballer, for a goalkeeper, to remain at a club but have their contract reduced, that must be quite a difficult thing to accept.
Yeah, yeah, it can be. I mean, I guess this is where, and again, where agents come into it, because look, the game has changed in the last few years. Certainly the level of the contracts for goalkeepers has changed in the last few years. So I think what ordinarily happens, it's quite a unique situation, interesting situation, because I don't know the exact details of it. My guess is that the option will be in the club's favour. So the club have a decision. It's like, well, we want to keep him, but if we give him his option, then it's going to be the same money he's on now, which in the current market is arguably paying too much, not just for him, but for anyone, because of where the market is. So they're then going to look at it and be like, well, look, we're not going to take your option, which then leaves them open because he can leave on a free in the summer. So it does leave Man United open. So they're going to have to offer him a contract that's good enough so that, and probably long enough, so that he can look at it and be like, all right, I can swallow the fact I'm not getting my option. I know where the market is now. I know that I'm not going to get more money anywhere else. So actually, although this is a bit of a kick in the teeth, probably the wrong term, but you know, it's a bit frustrating that I'm not going to earn the same. If I was on a free in the summer, where do I go and how much do I get? Is it going to be the same level of a Man United? If not, then actually let's look at this in isolation. Forget what I'm on right now and let's look at this for the next 3-4 years. Is this going to be a really good salary for me to continue doing what I'm doing? Do I enjoy it here? Is it one where I'm appreciated, etc.? So for me, I think it ticks enough boxes where if I was David De Gea, then it's a no-brainer to move forward with it. But again, this is where no doubt it will drag out a little bit because they'll be exploring everything else that is out there and making sure that if they do make the decision, they're doing it in such a way where they can maximise his position.
Okay, question number three, Richard. And this is a topic we've discussed many a times throughout Between the Sticks, throughout the feature interviews that we've done. It's a topic that's been discussed in goalkeeping for years. However, I'm going to put it to you again. And that is age nothing but a number when it comes to goalkeeping? And the reason I ask you this is we look at two goalkeepers currently in the Premier League, 20 years old, Gavin Batsunu, 22 years old, Ian Melier. Contrasting fortunes, sort of, this season. Melier performing very well, a couple of very good performances against Man City and Newcastle recently. Batsunu, on the other hand, is having a good season, but it's been quite tumultuous, I'd say, for his first campaign in the Premier League. And then if we go north of the border, you have two 40-year-olds currently plying their trade in the top flight of Scottish football. Alan McGregor made his 40th Old Firm appearance yesterday for Rangers at 40 years old. He's due to turn 41 at the end of January. And Craig Gordon, who has just turned 40 on New Year's Eve, has also tragically suffered a double leg break for Hearts. So he's going to be out until the end of the season, but has already said in a post on Instagram that he put out, I've dealt with this before, and he's already saying at 40 years old, don't you worry, I'll be back.
So this is, it's a fascinating one for me, this one. That I don't think it's necessarily about age. I think it's about experience. And again, I use the word experience, but having a lot of games doesn't necessarily mean that you are, it's a good experience. You know, I use the term also mental scarring, because I think every goalkeeper, you'll have some form of mental scarring at some point. You know, mistakes you make, how you deal with them, how you bounce back from them, the support you have around you. So where I see Batsunu as a really interesting case study is that he's shot to where he is now without having played that many games in League 2, League 1. I mean, in League 2, it might have been League 1, League 2, whatever it was, the first loan that he had, where he went to Rochdale. And from memory, they had a bit of a tough time. They got relegated. So he'll have had some experience of dealing with that side of it there. Then he's gone to Portsmouth and had a fantastic season. You know, everything went as well as it possibly could. And of course, massive deal in the summer. And then suddenly you're playing Premier League at 20 years old. So I think the only thing I would say about the situation he's in now is that a lot of what he'll be facing is very new to him. Now, that's not to say that he can't come through it, and I'm sure that he will. I get the impression from what I know that he's very confident. He's obviously got huge ability, and he'll be fine. I mean, it's been interesting watching the last few games and a few of the goals in particular, where there's some decision-making errors, which again, you could argue that when you are super positive and you're on top of your game, a lot of the decisions you're making instinctively. Whereas I just think at the moment, the fact he's in a struggling team, he's had a couple of tough moments himself, there just comes that element of doubt. Now, ordinarily, what you'd see maybe in League One, League Two is that might be where you bring a goalkeeper out for three or four games, like let them do what they need to do, recover, and then bring them back in. Of course, it's so different in the Premier League, and they have invested so much into him that ideally they're probably going to want him to ride this out and almost use his support. But then from Southampton's point of view, of course, if the tough run continues for him personally for too long, then, you know, it can be quite damaging for the club. So it's a real interesting situation, this one. And as you say, on the whole, I think he's done very well, started the season very well. But as you often see, you know, when a team is struggling, it can affect the goalkeeper a little bit. And that's where I think the older goalkeeper, it's kind of pros and cons, because then what you'll find with someone like a McGregor, like something that happens like this to him, it's just water off a duck's back. And he'll be exactly the same person in the next game, because he's been through it hundreds and hundreds of times before. The negative towards maybe an older goalkeeper at the moment might be that, you know, and I can sort of count myself in this when I played, was that we came through in a different generation. So in terms of the skill set that we learned, probably not the modern goalkeeper. And you're going to have a bit of a deficiency more often than not from a team perspective in terms of keeping possession of the ball, or maybe being as front-footed as some of the younger goalkeepers are. So I think there's pros and cons to both. And look, more often than not, it always comes down to what the manager sees a goalkeeper being. And I'd argue that the majority of the managers, if you were to ask them, what would you want? They'd still want that steady Eddie that's played 300 games, as opposed to maybe a young goalkeeper who is technically, physically better, but doesn't know the game quite as well as an older goalkeeper.
Do you look at those older goalkeepers as well, like McGregor, like Gordon? You retired at, was it 32 that you retired? Right. So that's 8 years ago. They're still playing now at the top level.
Oh.
Do you look at that and think that's just incredible?
It's incredible for a lot of reasons. I think first and foremost, from a motivational standpoint, because they've been there, done it. They've done it all so many times before. The bit that I struggle with, I mean, mine was more based on injury, but I lost a lot of enjoyment towards it because I just felt I couldn't ever get back to my best. You know, the older you get, naturally, you're going to lose a bit of distance on your kicking. You're going to be a little bit less powerful, a little bit less sharp. Believe it or not, silly things like your eyes might not be as good as you get that little bit older. Like all these things that start to work against you, and you can suddenly feel that goals that are going in that you knew you could have saved before, I found that very frustrating, and I was only 32. You know, so for these guys still to be doing it at the level they're doing, I mean, the one that I had close to me who I can reference was Brad Friedel when I was at Blackburn, and he was, he must have been late 30s then, or mid to late 30s then, and then he obviously continued well into his 40s. What I saw from him, though, was that I think when you've got the discipline of what these guys have, where they keep themselves right, they live right, they do everything they can to prolong their career and maximize their career, yeah, you can't have anything but huge, huge admiration for them still doing it at that age. Because, yeah, you look at most 40-year-olds, me included at the moment, like to go out there and even attempt to do what they're doing, it's something to behold.
So if I asked you at the weekend to come out and play Sunday League, for example, Do you think that you'd be able to do that? Would you be okay? Would you be able to get through a Sunday league game?
Physically, I'm not sure now, just because everything's kind of switched off, you know? So, like, where are all my past injuries? And that'd be the only issue. But no, I did step in for that. Some of our listeners might know, but one of my clients, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but this was a few years after I retired, but one of my clients I'd taken on loan, a young client, to a Conference South club. And it was a really good loan for him. So I was really pleased. He was progressing well. Then he got a call up to England under 19s, I think it was. And because of that, the club that he was on loan to were like, we don't have a goalkeeper and we need a goalkeeper to play at the weekend. So we're going to have to loan another goalkeeper in order to do that. So your goalkeeper can go back to his parent club. And I'll be honest, it's so hard for a young goalkeeper to get that first loan, get that experience. I was desperate for him to retain that loan. So I said to them, how about this? How about I play the game for you? I said, look, I'll get myself fit. I'll do a week's worth of training. I'll play the game for you. And then my goalkeeper can continue to be your goalkeeper. And anyway, they agreed to it. So that was the only experience I've had. And it was quite interesting. So I went and did one training session with them. And then I played the game on the, I think it was a Tuesday night or something like that. And I'll be honest, I was more nervous for that game than I've probably been any other game, just for the fact that I hadn't put a pair of gloves on in 3 years. But what I found, once the game got going, it is just, I suppose it's like anything, you know, it's, you suddenly go onto autopilot, you know, the things come back to you quite quickly. It's like if, I suppose, try and give another example. If you haven't played golf for 3-4 years and then you try to swing a golf club, it's not going to be completely different to what it was 3 or 4 years ago. You've still got that in you. You've got that muscle memory where I can still dive and make a save. I can still read the game. I can still communicate. I can still, so, you know, as much as I was nowhere near what I was when I played, I was still sort of 70-80%, because you just don't lose that. But the bit I did lose, I remember the game itself, like my kicking, it was so short. You know, trying to strike a ball where it was never long at the best of times, but it was dropping a good 20 yards short of halfway. It suddenly made me realise just how hard it is to kick it as far as these lads are kicking it. And in terms of sharpness, you know, moving around the goal just didn't feel quite as mobile, quite as quick, quite as sharp. But again, that would have been the physical side, just not working on it.
On to question 4, Richard. And this is to do with the curious case of Jamal Blackman, currently with Exeter City until the end of the season. And I say the curious case because I have to admit, sometimes I've seen Jamal Blackman play and I've thought, I'm not entirely sold on him as a top-level goalkeeper. But then particularly this season and the past 3 games, actually, he's had very good performances against Portsmouth, against Bristol Rovers and against Oxford United. An assist in one of those games as well. A big kick, as no doubt you'd describe it. But we've seen a lot from him this season. We've seen some fancy footwork in some games. He's played, I read a stat the other day, so he has now featured more than 20 times this season. It's only the 4th time in his career, only the 4th season, considering he's 29 years old. Of course, for a long time, he was the longest serving player on Chelsea's books without actually ever playing a single minute of professional football for them. But it looks like it's gentleman's agreement of sorts with Exeter this season. Bit of a back-scratching situation where he's gone there to get games, he's getting those games, but he still very much sees himself as a top-flight goalkeeper. What do you see in Jamal Blackman?
I think from, again, he's 29, so to use the word potential is probably the wrong word, but he's got everything. Like, it's one that, if you were to design a goalkeeper, what is he, 6'4", must be, 6'4", 6'5", lovely shape, moves well. I used the term earlier, mental scarring, and I might use that again. I know he had a serious injury as well, which then pegged him back a bit, plus such a bizarre story in that he was with Chelsea, as you say, for so long. I think financially, I'm sure that he did quite well when he was at Chelsea. And it's kind of a bizarre existence when you're going on the odd loan here and there, but are you ever then going to get in the Chelsea first team? I think for a period of time, they thought he would. And of course, it didn't quite work out for him. But I think now, where I give him credit, I think what he's done now to take that step to an Exeter, even though he's played plenty of championship games and he's got a lot of experience, it's at, right, just how good are you? Like, start afresh, clean slate, go and be the star of the show for Exeter. And I think more often than not, you see some of the saves he makes, you know, aerially, he does well. Again, given his size, speed of footwork, he does well. He's got, you know, the ability to make a massive save. Distribution on the whole, I think, is good from what I've seen. Sometimes decision making, which again, we can say that about many goalkeepers, that might be the one thing that people have labelled against him. But I think in terms of, look, has he got the attributes to be a Premier League goalkeeper? Yeah. Absolutely. Will he be a Premier League goalkeeper? He probably needs his next move to be in the Championship starting, and I would argue with a club that have a chance of promotion. Now, that's not an easy slot to find. You know, that's a slot that, of course, every goalkeeper would want. But I would see that as being his route. But look, if we're talking, if we're doing this pod in 3 or 4 years and we're still talking at that point, first and foremost. But if we're doing a pod in 3 or 4 years and Jamal Blackman's playing in the Premier League, I certainly wouldn't be surprised.
It's a big call, isn't it, to make for him as a 29-year-old goalkeeper, because quite clearly he sees himself, and that's a good thing, right? He has the mindset to believe that he should be playing at the top. He has had the injury problems that you mentioned. He's played abroad. He's played in MLS. He had a spell with LAFC. He was at Huddersfield for a bit last season, didn't really get a chance there. But to actually decide for yourself to go, I'm going to drop down now to League One just to get those games, because you talk about perception a lot with a goalkeeper. Is the perception now that Jamal Blackman is a League One goalkeeper, or will it now be, okay, there's the Jamal Blackman that we knew, now we're going to see if he can do it in a higher level?
Yeah, look, I think that, you know, I mentioned before the fact he went on so many loans, there is something quite nice about just being somewhere where you know from minute one, I am going to be the number one goalkeeper. And I think there comes a point in every career, you know, we've mentioned this a few times, but our time with World Cup winner Emi Martinez, it was quite interesting. You look at his career where he hung on, sometimes maybe it looked like he wasn't going to hang on, he was going to leave Arsenal, but in the end, when he did eventually break through, of course it couldn't have gone much better. So it's always a massive call. I get the impression in this case it was more Chelsea's call than his call, but it's always a big thing when you do leave a club like that. It's like, right, what do you do now? And I actually think what he's done will be a nice model for a lot of goalkeepers in a similar position to follow, which is, right, go and get yourself that number one spot, play 46 games, show what you can do over the period of a season. And then look, if he's, I don't know what his contract situation is, if he's done a year, 2 years, but if you're just doing a 1 year deal and saying, right, I'm going to come in and prove that I am more than good enough for the Championship, for the Premier League, then again, you go again next summer where your stock is that much higher because you've proven that you can be a number one for an entire season.
Okay. And the final question, Richard, is the tide turning with Gary Neville and his favouritism towards goalkeepers? Because we heard in last night's brilliant victory for Brentford over Liverpool, some wonderful comments on David Raya, some lovely comments on Alisson throughout from Gary Neville, recognising the little intricacies even that often he misses. Is the tide turning?
I hope so. I really do. And I was really, as I was watching, because I was saying the same things when I see, you know, David Raya, the head, like, I love the header. For those who haven't seen the game, he's about 25 yards out, ball over the top. David Raya just cushions a header down to the fullback, you know, which again, most goalkeepers wouldn't be that front footed. Ordinarily, you'd be back in your box, allowing the defenders to deal with it. But he's taken command, headed it to the fullback. Brilliant, brilliant goalkeeping. Just takes the pressure off in an instant. And the fact that he spotted that, noticed it, complimented it. There was a couple of other occasions as well. Alisson's come out, read the game brilliantly well, came out about 40 yards. David Raya did a similar thing. And then again, a lovely little pass to the fullback. And each time Gary Neville's made a point that they're reading the game brilliantly. And no, look, that for me is great, because I think those are the kind of things, one of the reasons we started this pod is that that's so often missed, you know, and that as a goalkeeper, all of those situations as examples, had the goalkeeper not read the game in the way that they did, then each of those quite possibly ends up as a shot on goal, maybe a one-on-one, certainly a dangerous situation at the very least. So, you know, that from a goalkeeper's point of view, to see the danger and be able to cut it out of source like that is brilliant, brilliant goalkeeping. And yeah, that did bring a smirk or a smile. I'm going to go smile. Brought a smile to my face.
Okay, Richard, that's us pretty much done. But I thought before we depart for this particular podcast, we'd just have a quick review, really, a very quick review of 2022, a year in goalkeeping, and also the first half of this season, which is now down, of course, and we are in the second half of this season. So I thought I would task you and myself, we're both going to do this with our goalkeeper of the season so far, or in your case, you've gone with the year of 2022, and the surprise package, as it were, in terms of goalkeeping. So we'll go from the Premier League down to League Two. So we'll start at the top, actually, and then we'll finish in League Two. So do you want to give me your Premier League goalkeeper of the season so far?
Okay, Matthew. Well, it turns out I didn't actually know the assignment now that you've said goalkeeper for the Premier League, because I just did one goalkeeper in the out of the four leagues that I think is the goalkeeper of the year.
Oh, okay.
So not only was it, you were just talking about this season, I've done 2022 and I've only done one goalkeeper.
Oh, crikey.
This is just like being back at school. I always got it wrong. when it came to homework. I always did the bare minimum.
So hang on. So I've got, you know, I've got 8 goalkeepers written down here. How many do you have?
Two. I've got one surprise package and I've got one goalkeeper. But no, do you know what I will do? I was going to give honourable mentions for a few. So again, I'm answering a completely different question to the one you've asked. But goalkeeper of the year 2022, want to give an honourable mention to James Trafford. I think that after a tough start at Accrington at the back end of 21, I thought for Bolton this season, he's been exceptional. An honourable mention for Lee Nichols as well. I think that had a bit of a tough start to this season. I think the whole of the Huddersfield squad did. But again, finished the season very strong. Brilliant for them last season. But my goalkeeper of the year, and I'm a bit biased because he is the lad that I work with, but I'm going to go Lawrence Vigouroux for 2022. I think he's been exceptional. Only 13 goals conceded this season so far, so I'm going to go with him. And I've realised I've not even named a Premier League goalkeeper, although a Premier League goalkeeper is one of my surprise packages.
Okay, so not only have you completely botched this assignment, I've just said we're going to go from the Premier League down into League 2. You've gone into League 1, jumped up to the Championship, and then reverted back to League 2. This is unbelievable. Yeah,
I did spend about 3 minutes on this. I'm not going to lie. I've been very busy, Matt. Very, very busy. So don't put me on the spot. But go on, hit me with yours.
Well, I did think this wouldn't be about stats, right? This is very much about the eye test. Mm. I thought we'd just do that. That's what I thought would make it nice and quick. So in the Premier League, I thought goalkeeper of the season so far for me is Nick Pope. Just the way that he's adapted to life at Newcastle. Absolutely brilliant. Most clean sheets in the Premier League this season. I said it wasn't going to be about stats, but I just thought I'd mention that. And surprise package is a little left field, but Vicente Guaita, I'm going to call a surprise package. Not because of his performances. We know how good he is, but I just felt that Sam Johnston going to Crystal Palace in the summer would have seen him gain more first team minutes. Do you think actually that Sam Johnston is surprised perhaps about the lack of first team coverage that he's had?
Yeah, I think he will be. I think the plan, or looking from the outside in, you kind of felt like it was a succession plan and that it would then at some point, that transition would happen quite early in the season. Hasn't yet. And as you said, huge credit to Guaita because, yeah, I think in terms of consistency, I don't know if there's another goalkeeper that you could argue is as consistent as him. You know, how often do we talk on here about him making a mistake? You know, his name actually barely comes up, which is a huge compliment to him, if I'm honest. So, yeah, I do think Sam Johnson will be surprised, but at the same time, I don't think he could have any complaints.
Okay, we'll go on to the Championship, shall we?
I mean, do you want me to give my surprise package?
Yes, I do. So do you have those there, Premier League goalkeepers?
Do you know what I do? I've got one Premier League goalkeeper, and it's one that, I mean, is it a surprise? I guess it kind of is. Again, I was doing 2022, so but then that still fits. That still fits with this. So basically, my surprise package isn't a massive surprise, but I just want to give him further credit, really, for what he's done, which is Aaron Ramsdale. Because I kind of look, and I think, again, I've made this point a few times, when he left Sheffield United, and obviously it was a relegation with Bournemouth, relegation with Sheffield United, and I know there were so many question marks when he was joining Arsenal. You know, I think it's fair to say people looked at the transfer fee. Had he done enough to warrant that? Is he going to be one of the world's elite? And I just think to see him doing what he's doing with his own identity, and again, you know, we've mentioned this, we've all got different ideas on what we see a goalkeeper being and what we like a goalkeeper to be. But I think he is the perfect version of himself. You know, he is very much expressing himself in every game he plays. He loves to play the pantomime villain from time to time. He's really feeds off the energy of the negativity, maybe, of the travelling supporters. And I just think for Arsenal going into this run-in, I do feel that he's the type of character that they'll need. We spoke earlier about experience. I think that he's been through so much so quickly. It's now going to stand him in such good stead going into the next few months.
Okay, very good. We'll quickly whiz through it, shall we? The rest?
Yes,
let's do it. Because you can actually, the whole point of me coming up with these names is that you can then riff on these names, okay?
Okay.
So my goalkeeper of the season so far in the Championship, I thought I'd go with Freddie Woodman, not just because of the clean sheet stats and the great start to the season at Preston. But his performances, especially recently, really good game against Stoke. They got the late win against them, of course. Another 1-0 win for them. But I just feel like he's really taken the opportunity now. We saw him have plenty of loans, but he's finally taken the plunge to move permanently to a club. And I think he's delivering.
I'd have to agree. Yeah, I think it's, again, probably similar to what we said about Jamal Blackburn. When you do leave a bigger club and you go to a club to firmly establish yourself, and I think if someone had said to him at this point in the season, you'd have the record that you do and put in the performances that he has. I mean, I know the Preston fans absolutely love him. Obviously did very well on loan before at Swansea as well. And one of the things when I watch about him, the word I'd use for him is intelligent. I think that he's a very, very intelligent goalkeeper. He knows the position. When he plays, you know, very few positional errors. Really enjoy watching him play. So, yeah, I'd have to go with you on that. The other name I'm going to mention, if that's okay, this is more of a surprise package in the Championship, and that is Jack Bonham, for the fact that he joined Stoke as a number three goalkeeper and the fact that he's played, I think, as of talking, must be 30 games now, which how many times do you see a goalkeeper join as a number three initially and establishes in the way that he has? And I think, you know, he's another one where we talk about stories and careers and kind of going around the houses here, there and everywhere, but to now be the number one goalkeeper at Stoke, I'm going to give him my surprise, but not surprise. Having known him, or knowing him the way I do, I'm not surprised, but I think for maybe a lot of people outside looking in, for him to have done what he's done, that would surprise a few people.
My two surprise packages for the Championship are two goalkeepers that I'm putting on a par for their performances this season. Ben Wilson and Anthony Patterson. Wilson of Coventry and Patterson of Sunderland, I think. Wilson, because I just think he's exceeded expectation. This is a goalkeeper who, you know, milled about the lower leagues and non-league for a huge part of his career. Hadn't really played that many games up until a couple of seasons ago, until he moved to Coventry. And this season has taken the gloves from Simon Moore and has not looked back. He's been excellent for Coventry, as has Patterson. Has been shown faith to be the number one for Sunderland in the Championship. You thought they might delve into the market. They brought in Alex Bass, of course, but not to be a number one. But Patterson has made that number one spot his own. Very good from him.
I'd have to agree with both of them. Certainly, I think Patterson in particular, so what you sort of saw in the summer was they got promotion, but given that, you know, he'd played a decent number of games last season, but you're still young and you still kind of think like, oh, surely now they're in the Championship, they'll bring in some established number one Championship goalkeeper. And credit to Sunderland as well that they've really backed him, because I think it was kind of an easier decision to go and bring in somebody who's been there, played 150 games in the Champ, and, you know, that would have been the kind of one that maybe the fans would have expected. But, yeah, just watching him, and certainly watching the games this season, his mentality seemed second to none. You know, he's stepping up in all these big games, making big saves. No, I certainly agree with that. And you're right, Ben Wilson, pretty much out of nowhere, and the fact that he got his chance quite early on, and you did wonder whether it was just going to be a case of come in for a few games, then Simon Moore would resume, given that he had a solid season last season. But yeah, credit to Ben Wilson, barely put a foot wrong in that time and is very much the number one now.
Definitely one for the pod, I think, Ben Wilson. That's a great story. League One. Okay, so my League One goalkeeper of the season so far, I just cannot look beyond Michael Cooper of Plymouth. He's just consistently very good. In fact, 115 straight starts for Cooper as Plymouth number one. And I know I said I wasn't going to talk about stats again, but he's actually second in League One for goals prevented this season. Who do you think's top, by the way, just very quickly?
So I'd have said James Trafford, but maybe I'm wrong.
Connor Ripley.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Connor Ripley is top of that particular stat, but he's also just behind Ripley and Luke McGee of Forest Green for number of shots on target faced Michael Cooper. So that shows, of course, Plymouth riding high in League One, but he's still being tested and he's still consistently producing. I know they're constantly batting off the rumour mill to say, no, he's very much part of our plans. But if he does move, you'd imagine it will potentially be to a Premier League club and for a lot of money.
Yeah, I think if he carries on doing what he's doing, I think he's got a great shot. And then it's that decision, does he go to a Premier League club? I know Bazunu's gone in as the one, but you often find that they'll be brought in as a two or a three and maybe going on loan. I think as long as he's playing Championship football next season, which if Plymouth carry on doing what they're doing, then there's a good chance he'll be doing it with Plymouth. And that would be why I could see him staying another season if they do get promoted. But yeah, I can't help but feel probably similar to a Christian Walton as well. If they're not going to get promoted this season, then I think goalkeepers of that calibre, you know, it'll be hard to keep them in League One.
And my surprise package in League One, just quickly, was Max Striak of Wycombe Wanderers. Another goalkeeper who wasn't really that well known. Again, floated about a bit earlier in his career. He's only 26, in fact, but was at Eastleigh. Had to go back to Poland because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and then managed to get that gig at Livingston after a trial and has not looked back again. I remember when Gareth Ainsworth, when they signed him, Wickham, he actually did say, I feel like we've kind of unearthed a bit of a gem here that not that many people know about. And he's come into League One, taken to it like a duck to water. And again, stats, highest save percentage in League One for him, 82.8%.
Well, there you go. Again, can't disagree with you, Matthew. You actually, do you know, I feel like the more that we've done this, your goalkeeping knowledge is improving very, very quickly.
Very, very quickly. We're about 4 years into the podcast.
Okay, it's taking a little bit of time. But no, do you know what? Actually, it's weird. Like, normally when I speak to non-goalkeeping people, I struggle and I pull faces. And I don't mean to. It's just, you know, when they're talking, I find it hard not to give away how I'm feeling. But, like, I'm genuinely enjoying these conversations with you these days.
Okay, well, we talked about insulting earlier with regards to Hugo Lloris and Petr Cech. To call me a non-goalkeeping person, considering I've created a goalkeeping podcast specifically based around you and your career, is quite insulting.
I mean, I meant it as a compliment, but again, here you go. Here's a psychological one for you. Communication isn't what's said, it's what's received. So if you haven't received my positivity, then, I mean, that's probably your problem, not mine.
Okay, so in League Two, very quickly, top goalkeeper. Yeah, I'm with you on Viggs. Lawrence Vigouroux, I think, has to be the number one there. And my surprise package, this isn't really a surprise package, but it's more because I'd not really seen much of him until this season. It's Sol Brin on loan at Swindon from Middlesbrough. Thought he's been very good.
Yeah, he has. No, he has. He's been excellent. I know that when Swindon were looking for a goalkeeper at the start of the season, they thought, you know, better call Sol. That might have been... yeah, and that's exactly what they did, and I'm sure they're glad they did. I was trying to think of a few, actually, when you were saying some of the names earlier. I was thinking Michael Cooper, hanging with Mr. Cooper. Do you remember that? Is that what it was called, hanging with Mr. Cooper? You must remember that. That was back in your day.
Yeah, that's actually been a pun as part of Clean Sheet Club, if you were paying attention, Richard.
Oh, I don't. I just read the script that you give me. So, no, I apologize. I didn't see that. But, yeah. No, look, Sol Brin, I'll go with that. Excellent. Very good. I know that Swindon, moving forward, they're, you know, very keen to keep him for the second half of the season, which is, I suppose, another compliment to him that he's gone above and beyond what they probably expected. So, yeah, good call on that. I do think, I mentioned Lawrence Vigouroux earlier, I think, and again, I do watch a lot of his games, but certainly in terms of, we talked about attributes earlier, Jamal Blackman, he's another one, you know, where he's, yeah, lovely shape, size, moves well, distribution's great. And the way that Leighton Orient have been progressing this season, you know, as long as they can stay on track for the next few weeks, you know, you'd like to think they can get promotion secured quite quickly.
Very good, very good, Richard. That's us. I enjoyed that. Something a bit different, isn't it?
Nice that you finally thought outside the box. So I appreciate that. I've really enjoyed today. That was a compliment. That was a really good compliment.
Thank you. Good to mix it up occasionally. Yeah. A compliment tinged with sarcasm. Can't help but feel.
My favourite type.
Just a few very quick stories before we go. Chris Kirkland, of course, has called on football fans to throw their support behind their local food banks. He's offering budding goalies free coaching sessions in exchange for donations. So good to see that from Kirk. He's a good lad, always thinking about this sort of thing.
Yeah, no, brilliant that. Really good. And as you say, he is, obviously got to know him quite well. He is an excellent human being. Great to see he's doing that. It's a lovely initiative.
Sad, obviously, to hear of the loss of a footballing icon and legend Pelé. Not a goalkeeper, of course, but Italian legend Gianni Rivera, who played against Pelé, I believe, in the 1970 World Cup, I want to say, did say that if football didn't exist, he would have invented it. He was even a good goalkeeper, apparently, Pelé. So Jose Altafini, who was a Brazilian and Italian international, said to Rivera that Pelé was good in goal. One day before training with Santos, his team, he arranged with the coach to pretend to be a new goalkeeper who wanted to be hired. No one noticed that it was him, and he saved all the shots from the edge of the box. That's enough to know who he was. Isn't that a thing? Pelé, nicking goalkeeping. Pat Jennings, a CBE for him. About time.
Yeah, absolutely. Had the pleasure of working with him, actually, a couple of times. Used to come into Watford. It was only a handful of times, but yeah. My recollection of those sessions were really positive, you know, in terms of him, really warm character, and yeah, certainly in terms of what he's done for the world of football and everything else. I know it's being documented quite a lot at the moment, so delighted to see it.
And finally, Edison has now won 150 of his 197 games in the Premier League. That makes him the quickest player to reach 150 victories in the competition.
Yeah, that's unbelievable, isn't it? When you actually think of it, and again... in my mathematics are correct, that's more than 75% of the games he plays, he wins, which is just extraordinary. So yeah, a massive well done to him.
There's one goalkeeper in the top five behind him. So he's 197 in top. It goes Patrice Evra, Kevin De Bruyne, Fernandinho. And then in 217 games, there's a goalkeeper. Who is that goalkeeper?
Ooh, in the top five at the moment?
Well, of all time. Yeah, so to reach 150 victories in the Prem in the quickest time, that's the top five. And the fifth of those has done it in 217 games.
I'm going to go Petacek.
Correct, Richard.
Excellent.
We finish on a high. Okay, we'll be back, as I said, after the weekend, FA Cup action, etc., etc. But for now, that's us done. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.